What you say about me says more about you, especially when I think I'm speaking from a position of insecurity. I think this couldn't be more true. And I want to ask you the question, Jamila.
Mm-hmm.
Would you relate to, in that incident where we mentioned that it was 2:30?
Mm-hmm.
I'm annoyed at you because you saying that makes me feel like a hindrance.
Mm.
How much were you saying that to Umi and how much were you saying that to yourself?
I mean, in that moment, yeah, I did feel like, okay, now I'm a hindrance because you're telling me that I need to hurry up. But I've already said, don't make me a hindrance because just go on and do what you need to do.
And the point I've got to within myself is saying, I'm putting myself in your shoes. This was never about me. This was about me. To the extent to which I'm annoyed at my mum for pointing out that it's 2:30 and making me feel like a hindrance, that's self-talk. I could have responded in any given way to that external stimuli. And I would be thinking, I'm annoyed at myself because I took something in that was neutral. Someone relaying the time, neutral. And that hit on an insecurity. And I'm annoyed at this darn insecurity because all you do is get triggered. All you do is make me feel bad about myself. I was annoyed at you for making me feel like a hindrance. And the extent to which I was annoyed at you, that was self-talk. That was how much I'm annoyed at this insecurity. And what I'm speaking about, partly why I wanted to have this conversation, when I'm talking about I'm annoyed at me, this is the person I call myself speaking to the insecurity. And why I like having conversations like this, what I think personal development for me is about connecting back with those people that we've been disconnected to. Those people can be those insecurities. Part of the reason why I want to have this conversation, part of the reason why I go about things, is as an opportunity to connect to that person. Because if I understood him, if I spoke the language that he speaks, I think we could become allies. Yeah, this is the 27th episode of the Personal Development Podcast. It's a special one because I'm joined by two special guests who I'll let give their names and introduce themselves and give you a sentence or two about why they're on this podcast and how they know me.
So I'm Alison and I'm Eunice's mum and never done a podcast with him.
Have you done one with someone else?
Yes.
I didn't know.
Can
I listen to it?
I had it, but it's a long time ago and I don't know how to get hold of it again. So this is my second podcast and I guess it was bound to happen at some point. So here we are.
I'm Trila, I'm Eunice's sister. I've known him for 22 years. Almost 23. And yeah, I've been on one of your other podcasts.
You were on Personalities.
Yeah.
With Memuna.
Yeah.
Did you listen to it back?
No, because I don't like listening to myself.
Okay. Yeah. How did you feel about it after you recorded it?
I mean, I was able to forget it because I didn't listen back to it.
Okay. Yeah, this is my family. So I live with my mum and my sister. This is my family. And so far this season, I think Marley's been on every episode. He was a bit busy, so I thought, are we not going to have an episode because I want to keep up with Fortnightly for the whole year? And this is, the third or fourth fortnight? And I thought, are we going to drop the ball? But then I thought, okay.
Hey, did Marley do it with Hamza then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I did want to ask, How are you feeling about this conversation coming up?
Truthfully.
Mm.
Prefer not to have it.
How come?
Like, it's fine when it's just between yourself and people, but when it's going on the internet, it's just like, hmm.
It's not going on the internet.
Oh, I thought it was going on your website.
It will, if we come to the decision that it should, after we have the conversation.
Oh, okay.
But this conversation is to be had as if it's never going anywhere.
Okay.
Umi, how are you feeling? Yeah, I call my mum Umi. It means my mother in Arabic. But Umi, how are you feeling?
Somewhat mixed.
Mm.
Element of trepidation. Don't know what to expect.
Mm.
Don't know how open I'll be able to be.
Mm.
How deep I'll be able to delve and share. So
as open and deep as feels comfortable.
Of course.
That's what I'd say. Because you two saying that is kind of the expected response. You two know I can be very intense. And one of the things that I've realised, even doing this podcast, especially as it's developed, is that's not always comfortable for others. So I've had to relearn my approach, I think, and relearn my appreciation and understanding of people. That's all I'd say on it for now, but it's difficult. So, for example, I'm going to try and be very open and honest, as I've tried to do on this podcast, because at some point I do want to get to the point where every part of me is an open book for everyone. Mainly because I know that's not the case. And mainly because part of the book that I read, Radical Honesty, I think that's one of the best ways you can help people. And often what people need is someone who's gone through and overcome the particular hurdle that they're going through and trying to overcome for a bit more belief in themselves. So I'm going to try and be very honest. So, for example, a couple of hours ago, I asked Jamila, my sister, do you want to have this conversation? Almost in tears. Because when I first raised it with Jamila, there was almost a bit of trepidation. And I understood that trepidation. And she said, okay, something along the lines of, I may have to prepare to be triggered. And that's almost the expected response. And the almost in tears was because this is one of the things that I'd say has benefited me the most in my life out of everything that I've ever chosen to do. And it also seems to be one of the things that is most difficult for others or touches on a lot of raw nerves. So I would like to say a sincere thank you for both of you for doing this. But yeah, where am I speaking from? Last episode we got into the, well, I want to get into the habit of identifying where I'm speaking from as context. And again, as with this episode, I think it is going to be a very open, a very raw episode. Started a couple of days ago. What day did you have your session with Auntie Rahma?
Don't know.
So Auntie Rahma is, she's not actually our auntie, it's...
respect.
Yeah, it's religious etiquette, I guess. Auntie Rahma is our family therapist. And she's been having one-on-one sessions here and there with myself and Jamila, my sister. And I'd forgotten I was supposed to have a one-on-one session at 9 a.m. in the morning. I think it was Wednesday. And I think Jamila had a session at 10 a.m. in the morning, just after. I wasn't aware of this. And at about 9:30, or maybe it was earlier, 9:10, I received a text message, but I was trying to do some work. So I just thought, just stay focused, you'll read it afterwards. And then about at 9:30, I checked my phone, and it was Auntie Rahma saying, basically, are you still able to make the meeting? And I'd totally forgotten about it. And for a strange reason, I felt the worst that I've felt in a very long time. Almost immediately, there was a sinking feeling in my stomach. Almost immediately, there were tears in my eyes. And I felt, like, deeply bad. And I felt that way for a while. And then when I heard Jamila on the phone, I was partially relieved because I was like, oh, I haven't wasted too much. Hopefully I haven't wasted too much of her time. I heard Jamila on the call with Auntie Rahma. I was partially relieved. But the more I heard her voice, the worse I felt. And in that moment, why I was saying, okay, I think I feel this bad, is because I was so appreciative for what she's been doing for me and for my family. And I don't like to let people down or waste their time. But I felt way worse than that explanation could give. So a tool that I discovered a while ago, about a year ago, was to ask yourself, what's the difference between what has happened and the story you've told yourself? And I wrote it down. It's in there. I'm not going to read it out, but I'll relate the story. And what had happened was I'd missed a meeting. The story I told myself, and again, I say none of this judgmentally. I'm hugely grateful for all of this having happened. The story I told myself is that I can remember from pretty early growing up, there were good examples and there were bad examples. And I remember the message was to follow in the good footsteps and everything that we want, but also avoid the bad examples. Also, don't be like this. And one of those bad examples was not turning up for people that matter to you, or turning up late. And I instilled that value in myself on, I want to turn up for people that matter to me, and I don't want to be late. And I knew firsthand how that affected you on the receiving end when someone doesn't turn up for you or someone doesn't turn up on time for you. And that was a big thing for myself. And here was supposedly me being tested by those values and me failing. And I remember I was writing, and at some point I just wrote, because I don't want to fail. And when it's as big as I don't want to fail, and me missing a meeting is a reminder of this fear that I have, that I am failing or I am a failure, that explained the severity of my response. Because I wouldn't have been in and out of tears or just feeling very bad because I just missed a meeting. I don't really care. Auntie's response was, she said, okay, it's understandable. That's human. That made me feel so much better. And I almost forget that I'm allowed to be human. And then I was thinking, okay, that's an insecurity. I haven't been too aware of many of my insecurities. I remember, again, about a year ago, just over a year ago, Sam Kay, who was on my course, he was also on personal politics. I think that's episode 10. He asked me if I had any insecurities, and I was like, no, I don't think so. But I think it's because I just didn't know where they were. So the question I asked my mum, my sister, off air, was, what place are you going to be speaking from? I think that newfound awareness of the almost hidden motives behind a lot of my actions is where I'm speaking from. Do you two have anything to say in response, or do you want to? Do you relate at all? Do you have any further questions?
I recently watched Encanto, and the whole film is about insecurities, essentially. Literally the whole film was emotional damage. And it was like so. Each character that they touched upon, it was sharing the facade that they put out to the world, and then it was delving deeper into their insecurities. It was very hard to watch as an empath. And I don't necessarily I've never labelled myself as an empath until my therapist labelled it, because essentially, I didn't know. I just thought, people are doing this. Oh, you're over-emotional, you're too sensitive, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, that whole entire film was about people's insecurities. Like their own personal insecurities, and then even to the extent, because obviously it's based on a an immigrant family, and the matriarch, the grandmother, her insecurity was basically she'd been chased out of her home. Her husband had been killed by the colonizers, and her whole thing was she has to make a perfect home for her family, essentially. And if it's not perfect, then everything's going to fall to pieces, like it did when she was being chased out of her home. I'm not going to say the rest of the film, but yeah, the whole film was about insecurities.
And I feel like what I was saying before, the motive behind the motive explains the motive better than the motive does. But the reason why I didn't want to say that is because it's too...
Yeah, only it'll take a while for other people to digest what you're saying.
Yeah. I think our insecurities explain our very complicated natures, is what's that saying. I think our insecurities, because I wasn't able to explain why I felt so bad. I don't really care. I'm usually chill about almost everything. Miss a meeting, okay, fine. But when you look at what was the story that I told myself, and that typically goes back to a sore point. That's when I think I had a newfound understanding of insecurities, because I don't think I have that many. A week ago, I didn't think I had that many, and they're not triggered that often. But I think they explain a lot of how we think and how we act better than the explanations that we'd usually give for why we're thinking and why we're acting. You're nodding at me.
Because I'm thinking about our overt expressions, what people see, and buried beneath those can be something they wouldn't necessarily glean. So that's why I was nodding, because it resonated with just me understanding, talking about human nature, people understanding me or not. Or me knowing that they haven't understood me. So, listening to you and Jamila speak, I'm thinking, what are my insecurities? What can I talk about? And then thinking, I think this is one. So, yeah, it's just interesting to hear you both approach the subject. And I'm trying to process what mine are.
Do you guys think I'm an insecure person?
No, you're one of the most confident people and self-reassured people I've ever met. Like, I know that you've got certain insecurities that you might not even recognise. Like, I might not know the root cause of it, but I've seen behaviour where it is like, yeah, that is something, that is a sensitive point for him, whether or not he acknowledges it or realises it. But still, you're one of the most self-reassured people.
Yeah, I agree with you. What does that mean, though? Because what are things like for others, and how come it's not being said?
What's not being said?
No one really speaks like this. No one really speaks about their insecurities. No one really
they do,
but I wouldn't say our culture. Like, our culture exposes us to sit down and watch television together. Like, it's common to watch television. It's common to go for coffee with friends. I wouldn't say it's a part of our culture. We compliment each other on our appearance. We don't say, oh yeah, how are your insecurities doing?
I don't know about you, but me and my friends, we talk stuff through, like, on a regular basis.
What stuff do you talk about?
Things that are bothering us, our own insecure, like, this is completely normal for me and my friends.
So this is a well-versed field for you?
Yeah. God. Yes, whether or not I'm... It just depends on who I'm comfortable around.
I'd agree.
Really?
It's a whole new world for you.
I can think
really
of one group of friends where that's what we... That's part of the ether for us.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. I know people say men and women are different.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not all men. But if I bet every pound I ever made, ever, I'd bet on that does not happen as anywhere near standard for men. At all.
Hmm.
At all.
I think if you have a group of women, girls, whatever, who are genuinely close, and it's not the fake, oh, Instagram, we're literally just going out for the aesthetic sort of thing. If they've actually got a genuine friendship, they will sit there and talk about their insecurities.
It's not that we'll get together and we'll have a session on, you know, but we'll get together and somebody may come up with something and we'll obviously generate discussion. It's not couched under insecurities, though.
Could you give me an example?
One sister was talking about one
and
of
again,
her
sisters, Islamic culture.
One friend was talking about one of her children and concerns that she was talking, and we gave a response to something that she had said. She had braced herself to say it, as far as I'm concerned. She kind of delivered the what I think she thought was going to be like a something that stopped the conversation, and we became critical. And each one in turn, we were saying, but hang on a minute, what's the problem with that? That's positive. That's this. And in the end, she heard it all and she said, it was along the lines of, I really wasn't expecting this. I thought you were going to judge me. She expected such negativity.
Mm.
Now, it wasn't rehearsed. Each one of us would see the cogs going.
Mm.
It's like, but what's wrong with that? Or I remember saying, but that's positive because...
Mm. That doesn't happen for me.
But that's not couched under insecurity in the way that I thought this podcast was going to be.
And what I was going to do next is try and define that a tiny bit. Mm. I have my own theory in my head, but I don't want to do all the talking first.
Wait, do you not say if something's really bothering you?
Nope.
You don't sit down with your friends and like, this is...
Nope. No chance.
Why?
But men are insecure about having insecurities.
Yeah. Yeah. So they start podcasts. I'm not talking about this stuff. It's been a trend recently where they start podcasts and And instead of addressing their own issues, they'll go and deflect and target people, which just goes to show how insecure they are themselves. Because if you're not that insecure, you're not going to be targeting other people with your hate.
I was going to say, surely not all men.
All men. Not all men, but...
Majority.
Yeah.
Well...
Enough that you're not actually doing a misjustice when you just label woman.
I know there's the stereotypes then, but you have a problem. How do you...
You sort it out.
No man is an island.
Every man's an island.
No, you... Well,
I was watching something and I think it was like a crime drama or whatever. And... this family had just been told that, I don't know if it was a child or their child or whatever, had, the police came and it was like, oh, so-and-so has died, blah, 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 and it wasn't nice circumstances and everything. And I remember the whole family were crying, like the kids, everything, the mum was crying, and the man was standing there and obviously hugging them and everything, and then... And he's just, like, completely stoic. And then he leaves the room and has a complete breakdown by himself. And then he has to put on a face in front of his family. And I just thought, that is so, like, I understand the whole, oh, I'm there to protect, but part of protecting is showing your weaknesses as well, because otherwise no one can make up for the pitfalls of your own yourself, if that makes sense.
Yes, but totally no. Yes, absolutely.
What is the totally no?
That's unnatural. It's a desirable position. I don't think any of that comes naturally at all.
I don't think it's...
So, for example, I'm saying...
naturally.
I'm saying... Or it just doesn't seem...
Socially. It's become social... I think it would be more accurate to say it's become unnatural because of social pressures and how it shaped you. Not because it's literally unnatural.
Perhaps. But... the social pressures and how they shaped me seem so innate for me, and I'd say most people's masculinity, that it seems genuinely unnatural. To the point where I don't know how much of this actually arises from social pressures or how much of this is just how we are as men. I wouldn't be surprised if it was just how you are as men. Because, for example... I'm not getting into a whole social discussion on roles or whatnot. Do you really want to see your warriors quaking in their boots and weighing themselves before they go out into battle? You're thinking, okay, the Luftwaffe are here. We need to be protected. You want to see some strong, valiant soldiers walking off. That makes you feel safe as well.
You want somebody who can acknowledge how terrified you are and for them to say, I understand, because I'm feeling the same way.
Yeah.
But we have this shared mission, we've agreed on it, and we're obviously going to go out there and do our utmost. But I acknowledge, you don't just walk past and pull yourself together, go on as if you don't share.
You shouldn't. I think everyone knows you shouldn't, and I think men know how much it doesn't serve them as much as it does. But that just seems like the natural state.
So men have insecurities, but they're not meant to show it or talk about it, express it, share it. How
I'm not
on
saying
earth?
I'm not meant to. I'm just saying
it's very
difficult. Well,
socially, it's become you're not meant to.
That's ridiculous.
Because I don't know how much has come from socially or how much has come from me. It's very hard to distinguish. But you guys have never impressed any of that on me.
But then you went on to a very... You went into a very...
boys' school.
Yeah, boys' school. I don't know the percentage of male teachers, but it was... Obviously, there's a huge majority of men, boys, whatever. And then you've gone on to a very male...
course.
Yeah, engineering. So that has pretty much shaped your... Because those are the years where you kind of testing the waters a bit more in terms of your own identity and what you can and can't do.
But you're always having conversations. You communicate.
You don't communicate. You talk, but you don't really communicate.
What do you talk about then? When you
football.
How can you tell
football.
When somebody's struggling,
you
when
can't.
Somebody's having a problem?
You can't. You can't. You can't. That's happened. That's happened to me. That's happened to me.
Which is why male suicide is the highest among men. And it's not necessarily that men have the proportion of mental health problems. It's just that they don't talk. They don't have that support, or they don't feel like they can get that support because it's like, yeah.
I assumed that within your friendship group you'd sort of section
chance.
You know, one or two of
you said that you had
two or three.
One person.
I can think of one. And because otherwise it's crazy. It's
obviously there'll be some things that happen, and obviously, yeah. I can think of examples where that has happened. It's not commonplace, though. It's not standard. You deal with your own problems. After you've solved the problem, perhaps it comes up in conversation. But by and large, you deal with your own problems. And I think part of that just comes from the next episode I intend to be on masculinity. So I'm not going to try and give the whole explanation. But I think there's a very strong, natural, independent resourcefulness to masculinity. I think it comes from that as much as it comes from society. What is an insecurity then? Because that was linked, but I don't think that was the topic. What would you guys say is an insecurity?
Never being enough.
A fear of not coping.
Of not coping. That's very specific. I understand. I think I can resonate more with Jamila's definition than with that one. So I'm going to ask you to explain that a bit more.
I'll go back to a bit earlier when I was listening to you and Jamila speaking at the beginning. I was thinking, what? What are my insecurities? I must have some. And I'm thinking mine pertains to fear of not coping, of not juggling everything that I needed to do and managing everything. And the desperation to do all of that and yet feeling oftentimes depleted. It was a vicious sort of circle. I don't know. But that to me, it's the only thing I can identify as an insecurity, the fear of not coping and managing.
Is that something that you would seek to hide from others seeing?
Yes.
Because that's one of the characteristics I think I've identified of insecurities. You try and hide it from others seeing. And my framework that I almost entered into this conversation with, I used to know what the actual episode was. I think it's 14, Ego. I'll link it in the description. That opened up my view because they were touching on something that I now see as almost synonymous with insecurities, and those were the two speakers. And they were saying, when something happens, it's almost like there's a new you that is birthed from this experience. So the example I'll give is PTSD. Something happens and it's almost like there's this part of you in your psyche that was birthed as a response to it. And that's a very traumatized, complicated person in the case of PTSD. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that. But things can happen and there's a part of you. And you can either have a positive or negative relationship with that part of you. So, for example, you get 100% in the class. Everyone seems to think you're Einstein. A lot of people would say, okay, you've grown a big ego. That little big ego person maybe was a part that was birthed from that experience. That's how my insecurities typically arise. Something will happen and it's like there's this new part of me that is birthed. What turns that part into an insecurity is there's typically an element of shame. And Brené Brown, who's the author of the book that you're reading on me, she defines shame along the lines of the fear that you're unworthy of love and connection and belonging. So something will happen. It could be positive or negative. There'll be this part of me that is birthed. I look at myself, or that part of myself, shamefully, and that develops as an insecurity. And the two characteristics of my insecurities seem to be they don't want to be seen by anyone. That's a characteristic of my shame. And they do nothing but scan for threats and protect. Anything that could trigger them, you're always on the lookout. Like the typical one, I don't know why, but growing up, the typical, like, you'll be going out with your wife puts on the dress, does my bum look big in this, insecurity, they scan. Anything he says, you look fantastic, are you saying I look, they scan to try and see if this is trigger. Is someone seeing me? Defend, shut down, move away. That characteristically is my insecurity.
Well, that's
a characteristic of my insecurity. And going back to the example that I opened with, I can be a very stoic person. I can be a very independent person. There's no coincidence that I spent first lockdown on my own. I can be quite distant one of my insecurities, I think, is not managing that in a way in which I'm able to be there for the people that I care about in the ways that I want to be there. I'm not the most present friend. I think I have very strong friendships and connections with people. I wouldn't say presence is a characteristic of that. I know part of that, and I'm discovering part of the backstory for that. But say when, especially when someone means a lot to me or I admire them, typically when I admire and respect people, and say, for example, I miss a meeting, there's that fear. And I said it almost came down to, I don't want to fail. I don't want to have failed in this way because it means a lot to me. Again, I'm going to pause and I'm going to ask, do you guys have anything you want to ask or say?
So I did psychology, and some of the studies have shown, like, depression's a lot about looking back in the past. Insecurity/anxiety is a lot about looking at the present and the future sort of thing. So, yeah, what you're saying about the insecurity set you up to be scanning for things that are affirming almost your insecurities, then that does make a lot of sense.
I'm thinking from that your insecurity, it's almost like a shield, because you don't want to scare away a friend that you want to confide something in. You're hurting, you're struggling, or you're struggling with your thoughts and your feelings about something. And you think, but basically, if I share that, that's going to push them away. That's going to make them think lesser of me. And so, therefore, my insecurity would be guarded. Well, I can't share that much.
It's like a parasite, essentially.
With the friend, because I don't know, or at this point in time, I'm questioning whether or not they'll judge, they'll think, they'll think less of me. I don't want that to be the case. I want them to retain a good opinion of me because I believe that's what they do have. And it's, I'm thinking it's, you don't want to expose yourself.
Could I pause us quickly here and ask, how are you guys feeling?
More relaxed than I thought I'd be. Reflective.
Yes.
Are you happy at this level of conversation?
Hmm.
Could I try and take us one level deeper by getting a bit more specific and poking some holes?
Try.
Yeah, as we said, you can try.
Okay. I agree. And you said it's almost like a shield, and I like that. Because I mentioned it on the previous episode. I've been watching on repeat almost some videos. The one that I mentioned to both of you about addiction and trauma by Dr. Gabor Mate, or Mate. And he speaks about these addictions, which are these patterns of behavior, I'm paraphrasing, patterns of behavior which yield, it's almost like temporary gain or solitude or temporary benefits to our long-term detriment. Mm. That's how he's defined addictions. We know they're bad for us, but in the moment they tick some box that we want ticked. And he's saying one of the most helpful approaches for allowing people to overcome their addictions is to stop being so ashamed of them. So they say, actually, almost like how we've been talking about parts of ourselves, thank that person for coming along. They helped you at a time where you didn't have any solutions and you were struggling and you couldn't quite deal with this. They were an ally. A lot of times they are one of your only options. But we just seem to hate ourselves for them.
You're talking about parts of yourself?
Yeah. Oh. So here I'm referencing this addiction, or the part of me that needs to cling to this pattern of behaviour.
Yeah, it's like closure almost. Like, thank you for, like, you got me through that period, even if it wasn't the healthiest way, but you still got me through that period.
So it's seeing value.
And
move on.
That's what came to mind when you said it's almost like a shield. Because a lot of times our insecurities try and prevent us from going through the traumatic experience that caused them.
Mm.
So one of the things after I wrote that, what's the difference between what has happened and the story you told yourself, and it came to the conclusion, haven't quite followed through with this exercise, but I was like, thank every part of how you felt along that journey. Because it did orient me to a large degree in positive ways. You want to be there for people. You stand for something. You've moved yourself in a positive direction. It's an incentive for progress. However, you can now see how this is starting not to serve you. To the point where it's affecting you this much, you can now see how it's starting to not serve you. And I think this is where I'm saying, you acknowledge that person as a friend and you say, we've run our course, this interlinked, I think. And perhaps it's time for us to respectively and constructively go our separate ways. But I don't really know. I can't speak from much experience of overcoming my insecurity. So I was going to ask you to. Do you have any experience of, you've had a whole life, it's not that we haven't. Perhaps, I mean, you've had a whole life living with insecurity, so do you have any experiences of times where you're able to just let go of things?
I'm trying to identify specific.
If it comes, it comes. In the meantime, Jamila, yesterday, we were heading out. I've seen it happen before. I've been inquisitive before. But my mum at one point said something about the time. Do you remember what you said about the time?
It's already 2:30 or something.
It's already 2:30 and we wanted to leave before it got too late. Do you remember what you said?
I said something along the lines of, I'm already trying to get ready.
And I was confused. I wasn't actually confused, but I was confused. Because I thought, my mum's just said, it's already 2:30. My sister's saying, I'm already trying to get ready, almost as if she's objecting to the fact that my mum's just stated that it was 2:30. And I was like, that doesn't seem like a logical response.
No, what is underlying what was saying. She was only going to say, she's only saying that to be like, you need to hurry up. So.
And it seemed to irk you.
Yeah. Because one of my insecurities, because it was the whole being late thing. It's like, if I'm already doing everything that I can do, then I'm going to... there's really... unless you're going to help me to get ready any sooner, there's literally no point in you telling me that what the time is. Because I'm already very conscious of that. I'm trying to get out of the house already.
So, a conversation also that I've been having with my mum is, I think... and I'll give you the example that I gave on the previous podcast... I think things affect us when they hit at an insecurity or a part of ourselves that we are disconnected with or we don't sit easily with. I think if we are fine internally, genuinely, every part of who I currently am, every part of my story, who I was, me and him are A-okay. I think very little affects you in a deeply, like, I am deeply moved and irked way. And I've been noticing that when I'm irked, when I'm genuinely moved, in particularly frustration, it's because it is getting at something that doesn't sit well with me and how I view me. Someone said, it was a quote, you're only hating people what you hate in yourself. It's almost reminding me of that. So you mentioned again, it's the being late thing. What do you think it was getting at that moved you to being irked? Because you were aware it was 2:30. The clock was also telling you it was 2:30. You weren't getting irked at the clock. You were fine with the passage of time. On me saying that, I'm thinking, I'll let you confirm or deny, was hitting at an insecurity that you had, which was independent of what Umi just said and the time that it was.
No, there is a history of Umi telling me what the time is and I know exactly what she's getting at, and that just really annoys me because it's like it's not helping me at all. I know you want something from me, but it's not helping. So unless you're going to help me, then there's no point.
Why are you annoyed at that point, though?
Because there's a history of that continuously happening. If it had been the first time, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, it's 2 o'clock, or it's so-and-so time, fine.
Because things happen repeatedly, does that make us annoyed? The sun
Yeah, if you've already said out, it's not helping. No, well, the sun does come out, and sometimes I'm annoyed at because I'm like, I needed more hours yesterday. So, like, yeah.
What is it getting at? Because I'm looking through the lens of, I could see how, if I was in your shoes, I would get more and more annoyed every time Umi does that. Why? Because from day two, from occurrence two or three, this was getting at the insecurity of, I feel like a bit of a failure when I'm late and when I'm making people late. One of the ways in which I want to show that I care to others is by turning up punctually and on time and not being a time hindrance. That takes me in at severity 10 out of 100. The 50th time this happened, maybe I'm severity 300 out of 100 because the external stimulus has been the same, but because now I'm looking and I'm thinking, and I've been this way for a while, there's almost an additional insecurity, which is like, day one I slipped up, but I've sustained this, I haven't changed. I'm annoyed at myself for not being the person who overcomes their problems internally in a way that doesn't affect others. I'm annoying at myself for being supersized me in 140 kilograms and fat in 2010. I'm exactly the same now, but 12 years have elapsed. I'm annoyed for letting that happen. That's how I'd explain, maybe I'm getting more and more annoyed at my mum when she's highlighting the fact that I'm late.
I mean, I wasn't late. For me, that's an insecurity. Because we didn't have a set deadline.
And it was a comment to both of you.
I wasn't late. We didn't have a set deadline. I had had completely different plans to what Umi had planned. I'd said, you guys can just leave because I already have my own plans. So, don't use me. Yeah, don't make me a hindrance, essentially.
Don't make me a hindrance.
Yeah, in your plans. Like, I don't want to, like, if you guys need to leave, just leave. Don't wait on me, because then that's just added pressure, essentially. And I'm doing what I was planning to do already. So, it wasn't about me being annoyed with myself in that very moment. It wasn't about me being annoyed with myself. It was, I can literally not go any faster than I'm going right now, so you guys, if you need to leave, just go.
Why did you get annoyed if you weren't annoyed at yourself?
I was annoyed at the method Omi was using to get across that she wanted me to hurry up. Once again, I'll say it. If you're not going to be offering help, then I already said, just leave if you need to leave. Don't put any further pressure on me. Because I'm already doing what I need to do.
I'd see it slightly differently if I were in your shoes.
Yeah, but you're not, so...
Yeah, that's why I phrased it in that way. Because I think I only ever get annoyed at me. When I get annoyed at others, I'm really just getting annoyed at myself. When I get angry at others, I'm really just getting angry at me.
I don't really experience
that. That's how I've internalized it. Because, and then again, there's two quotes. The first, I think, enabled me to understand myself much better and understand others much better and to have compassion for others. And I was telling Umi this early on in the day. I think how we treat others is a learned behavior from how we treat ourselves.
Yeah, I do agree with that to an extent. Like sometimes, being annoyed can be completely independent of how you treat yourself, like how you internally treat yourself. Maybe how you get annoyed
I think if you never got annoyed at yourself, you'd never get annoyed at anyone else. I think you're only getting annoyed at other people because you have the relationship with yourself in which you would get annoyed at yourself. And I am talking about superhuman Buddha enlightenment levels of stuff here, but this is still how I view it. I think if I had the patience to wake up tomorrow and be like, come on, Eunice, are we there yet? No. But still accept him and still stay calm with that person. For the rest of my life, I don't think I'd ever get annoyed at anyone else.
I do think I think it affects your threshold for annoyance, but I don't necessarily think that I don't necessarily think that what annoys you is directly linked to what annoys you about yourself. I can be annoyed that it's so windy. But that's got nothing to do with me. I'm not a windy person. Like, it does make sense. So I don't think it's linked like that. It might be, your threshold might be, if you get annoyed easily at yourself, then you're probably going to get easily annoyed. But then again, sometimes there are different levels of compassion. Some people struggle with that. You can be a lot more compassionate to other people than you are to yourself, for some people. So, it might manipulate your thresholds for different things, but I don't think it's 100% exactly how your posing it is.
The second quote that I have down is, what you say about me says more about you, especially when I think I'm speaking from a position of insecurity. I think this couldn't be more true. And I want to ask you the question, Jamila. Would you relate to, in that instance where we mentioned that it was 2:30, I'm annoyed at you because you saying that makes me feel like a hindrance. I slightly abstracted that from what you said slightly earlier on. How much were you saying that to Umi, and how much were you saying that to yourself?
I mean, I didn't actually say that to Umi.
I know. But you're speaking from this feeling. So wherever that feeling of annoyance comes from, and again, I'm putting with how I've conceptualized myself.
I mean, in that moment, I did feel like, okay, now I'm a hindrance because you're telling me that I need to hurry up. But I've already said, don't make me a hindrance, because just go on and do what you need to do.
And the point I've got to within myself is saying, I'm putting myself in your shoes. This was never about me. This was about me. To the extent to which I'm annoyed at my mum for pointing out that it's 2:30 and making me feel like a hindrance, that's self-talk. I could have responded in any given way to that external stimuli.
I mean,
you would have put the other 7.8 billion people in your situation, they each would have responded slightly differently. And I would be thinking, I'm annoyed at myself because I took something in, like almost everything else, and I am talking Buddha levels here, that was neutral.
It wasn't neutral.
And someone relaying the time, neutral. This is just the framework. And that hit on an insecurity. And I'm annoyed at this darn insecurity because all you do is get triggered. All you do is make me feel bad about myself. I don't care if my mother raised the point, a factual point, that was and I'm annoyed because I'm speaking to an insecurity in me that I know. You hear my voice. I know I'm speaking my truth. I'm getting annoyed here because I relate. My mum, she's done similar to me. It's never about you. I'm annoyed at that darn insecurity that here's something I cannot disagree with, that here's something that is factually correct, and you don't let me just live. You don't let me just be as I am. You make it about me. You make it so deeply personal. You make me have this kind of crisis. You make me feel less valuable, less worthy as a person, less connected to others. So I wasn't in your position yesterday. From how much I can relate to being me and being my past self, I'm putting myself in there. Yeah, I was annoyed at you, Umi, for making me feel like a hindrance. And the extent to which I was annoyed at you, that was self-talk. That was how much I'm annoyed at this insecurity. And what I'm speaking about, partly why I wanted to have this conversation, is because, and I like how we've dissected it, it's a bit up in the air and abstract, but I like how we've dissected it, because when I'm talking about I'm annoyed at me, this is the person I call myself speaking to the insecurity. And why I like having conversations like this, what I think personal development for me is about connecting back with those people that we've been disconnected to. Those people can be those insecurities. You just heard how I speak to that person who makes me feel less worthy and like a hindrance when I'm late. Part of the reason why I want to have this conversation, part of the reason why I go about things, is as an opportunity to connect to that person. Because if I understood him, if I spoke the language that he speaks of pain and shame, and you're not worthy and you're a hindrance, I think we could become allies. Because I think, and I'm speaking for me here, the appropriate response, you said it to me, it's about 2:30. Thank you. I'm running a bit late. I'll speed things up. You've actually aided me here. Let's go. What are you thinking of me? And in this way, in how I delude myself, and I'm just speaking for me, how I seem to delude myself by convincing myself that I'm annoyed at you, I'm annoyed at you, and I'm annoyed at others, I think I rob myself of proper self-understanding. Because when I've gone through things, I've realised it's never anyone else that I'm annoyed at. It's never anyone else that I'm upset at. It's always, things happened, I processed it, parts of me and my history and my complicatedness and my insecurities told me stories. Those stories triggered the emotion. That's why I appreciated that exercise. What's the difference between what has happened and the story you've told yourself?
We spoke about this earlier on, Eunice. And I understand the basis of what you're saying and self-reflection that comes with it. But I just have difficulty in almost... It did make me think of The Matrix earlier on when we were talking this morning. Nothing penetrates, no matter what anybody does. You're there dodging, and I'm doing the actions now for the benefit of the... Like, you're there dodging all the bullets, all the emotions of other people, all the wrongdoings, all the issues, and you're absolutely fine because you're absolutely fine. You don't have a real emotional affected response to anything that anybody does, because within yourself...
It's very stoic.
I wish I could not be bothered by people and what they do and what they don't do. And yes, it's not all about them. Much of it is about me, but there's a lot about other people that bugs me, that affects me. Even if I don't share it with them, I internalise it, and then, that's about my... what's going on for me internally and whether or not I'm controlling that. But I'm affected. I'm a human.
Do you understand why you're affected in the ways that you're affected?
Some of it, I think your premise is all of it is about you and how you control, how you, you know.
I'd be hesitant to say all. I'm nodding. I'd be hesitant to say all because... I'd say all as a generalisation, not... I wouldn't say that as like a cold, hard rule.
Because going back to insecurities, it's about how you process, how you manage, you know? How you manage what's there already. Whether or not external forces can come through the field, penetrate the field, and how you then deal with it. When it's coming towards you and it's just internalised. I understand your point, but it's quite something to be able to achieve that and therefore to be this super well-rounded, well-charactered, emotionally, holistically healthy individual that strolls through life with a knapsack and whistling along and just jolly, jolly, jolly. It's an incredible sort of idea.
Do you think it also does have effects on how you, on your relationships with other people? Because people who typically do not care, like they couldn't care less what people thought of them, all of that stuff, they are typically very callous people. Or they're typically not very pro-social. I'm not saying you, but I from what I've seen, and a lot, well, the most extreme version of it is when you see criminals and they literally do not care, because they're so unaffected by some of them. I'm not talking about all criminals, I'm just talking about a specific set of criminals. They don't care what other people think about them. And therefore, they just do whatever they want.
They've gone into a zone that we don't go into.
I think precisely. And the distinguishment, I think, I'm naturally inclined towards. Why do they not care what other people think about them? Because it's too painful to care. Because when you have to look at yourself in the mirror and you are Hitler, you can't cope. So in the end, you stop caring. I think it's a completely different place. The motive behind the motive says more about the motive than the motive does. Sorry. I think you're in a completely different position when internally you are fine with who you are, and therefore sticks and stones may break your bones, but words and other people's opinions of you will never hurt you, to I'm a cold, hard, callous criminal and I don't care what you have to say about me. I'm just going to do me.
I mean, I'm not even talking about that.
Mm.
I'm talking about, yeah, people who genuinely, they're so self-reassured that they're able to tell themselves that, like, literally, people, like, irrespective of people's actions towards them, they genuinely do not care.
It's interesting, because I've along this journey, the more connected I feel to the parts of myself that have been disconnected, the fewer insecurities I have, the more I understand complexities of me, the more I've been able to connect with other people. Like nothing else. Because when I understand, I feel like when I understand me, the more I understand me in my complexities and how I work, the more I understand others, the less like foreign objects they seem, the less reason I have to be annoyed at them, and the more my heart is just open to utmost compassion. And we won't go for the example,
but like the example
of what happened on Eid with the elderly couple. Mm. The more I've been fine with who I am, the more I understand my insecurities and I'm friends rather than foes with them, the less defensive I need to be, the less I try to avoid being reminded that there are pained people in this world and there's a lot of pain in this world and maybe I'm not great or maybe I'm letting people down, the more connected I can stay to others.
No, that's your feeling of feeling connected to others. Do you think people necessarily feel that way about you?
As in connected to me?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I need to ask others.
See, that's what I'm saying. Obviously, in a relationship, there's two people, and you might feel really connected to them. I'm not saying that this is the case for you. I'm just talking generally. You might feel really connected to them, and they don't feel connected to you at all.
Is that what you're saying? That can happen.
Yeah, that can happen.
So the more...
It's like when you have an imbalance in a relationship. One person really loves the other person. The other person just like, I could literally live without them. Like, I'm in a relationship with them, but I could literally live without them. If we broke up now, I wouldn't care.
We're talking about hidden needs, aren't we?
Because I view it, I think I understand what you're saying.
Mm.
But I view it differently. So if I make it very personal, I don't know if you'd agree, but there's a lot of circumstances where I've kept my cool and for some reason or other, either one or both of you hasn't. There's also been circumstances, I think this is another insecurity, it's one of the things that I wrote down. I don't like having my character questioned.
Hmm.
Which sometimes happens a lot. And I view that as just a different way of viewing things. I view it most of the time, it's a misunderstanding. It's not that you're a bad person, or you're battling with a... It's not you just saying it's 2:30. It's me telling me I'm a failure of a human being. So I'm responding to that. So you blow up, so you're mean, so you're cruel, so this. I view it as that. I don't necessarily think you're a bad character. I think you're pained. Most of it, when I see myself lash out, it's because of the pain.
But if you're completely stoic...
I avoid it. The more I've seen myself become stoic, the more I've been able to hold the discomfort of others around me as they're feeling it and not feel the need to... I went for a phase where I was like, I'm not going to be shouted at. Compose yourself around me. This is not happening. And part of it is children internalize their treatment. Part of it is probably a small insecurity which says, if they're shouting at me, they can't love me. If they're shouting at me, they can't respect me. If they're shouting at me, I must be worthy enough, only worthy enough of this rank treatment. The more I was able to say, okay, I don't need you, those insecurities, like, I am fine. I'm not necessarily being disrespected here. I am fine. The more I've been able to sit there, stoic, and listen, where previously, walls up. I don't care what you're saying. I can hear your tone more than I can hear your words. Don't disrespect to be disrespected in my own home. That's not happening. So, I don't know, again, that's more talking about how I'm able to connect to others a bit more. That's not necessarily talking about the reverse, which could be just supporting what you're saying even more. However, I've seen it in the sense that it protects me from fighting fire with fire and lashing out. I can attest to how it's pro-social and pro-connection. But again, I'm aware that wasn't necessarily saying anything against your point. It could be even more. What do you have to...
What I've seen, if a person is emotional and they're met with someone who's completely stoic, they don't display any sort of emotion whatsoever in response, there's less of a connection there. Because you could as well be talking to a wall. The more stoic a person is, the less human they come across. You literally could be talking to a computer screen. Because then it just indicates that they're completely unaffected. Then they're... Yeah.
Why would you want to affect people?
It's empathy. So, because if you're...
Because when I'm thinking, if I'm angry... Really and truly, I don't want to make you angry.
No, I'm not talking about the other person reacts in exactly the same
emotions. I don't want to make you upset. Both of you seem pretty calm now.
Not even that, but there are... You can empathise in so many ways. If someone's literally just sitting there, dead, cold, silence, there's no emotional, display at all. I'm not even talking about huge emotional displays. There's no change in emotion, in face expressions.
So you're
just sit there.
You're speaking within a context of not necessarily having an exchange with someone, but sharing, sharing an experience, how you're feeling, blah, 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 and you're emotional about it, and the other person's just nothing.
Yeah,
as it seems, stoic.
Yeah.
That's different to having an exchange with someone in which one person is heated, becomes heated or emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other person is stoic. So that's two different contexts.
Yeah. So I do think it is healthy to be affected by other people's emotions, not necessarily... I mean, obviously you don't want that, but you're usually when you're sharing, you're not trying to make the other person have negative emotions, but maybe I'm just not articulating it properly, but...
I don't mean any judgment by this. And again, the more I've been aware of my insecurities, the more I realise the impossible job it is to be honest and not affect people and for people not to take it personally. But that sounds like a very toxic method of communicating.
No, because if you're happy, you'd want... when you're sharing a happy emotion...
Happy's fine. Yeah, happy's fine. Happy seldom makes me feel... triggers any of my insecurities. Apart from if I'm living with someone who seems to be always happier than me.
I'm not talking about triggering someone's insecurities.
Mm.
I'm talking about triggering emotion or an emotional response. And empathy is a form of an emotional response.
So I think that's made me think of sitting and listening to a friend who's going through problems. And I've sat and I've listened to understand because they want advice, they need advice. They want my advice.
Mm.
And I know it's important for them to feel that they've been heard. And in them speaking, they are can be emotional. And that is what I'm hearing from the example, the context that I think Jamila is talking about.
Because it could be invoking, oh, you might be really emotionally distressed, and then there's you can see the curiosity in that person's face. Or rather than them just sitting, complete poker face, nothing, absolutely nothing. It's like they're not even receiving anything. When you show concern, it's like there's an element of curiosity or...
Okay. Yeah, I think the conversations diverge from sociopathic behaviour. Because if you are speaking to a literal brick wall in every single way, depends how they've entered the conversation, what intentions. Yeah, someone's having a breakdown in front of you. I don't think you're just sitting there meditatively.
Yeah.
I was talking more of a... I would like to be at a place where your negative emotion doesn't trigger negative emotion within me that is directed to me, because that's what my insecurities do.
Mm.
My insecurities is different from, like, just because I'm sad, it doesn't mean it's a negative emotion.
Mm.
It's an insecurity, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
But when something triggers a negative emotion directed towards me, it's almost always an insecurity. And that's where, like, for example... A common example. I got to the point out of not really knowing, out of feeling powerless, and I'll give you an example and we'll see where do you want to take it from there. Out of feeling powerless, I got to the point where I was like, do not shout at me. It became personal. It became personal. It wasn't just do not shout at me. It was, Uniski, don't be the person who's being shouted at. They can't love, respect, X, Y, Z, U, if they are shouting at you like this. That drove disconnection rather than connection. That's why I was saying, I think me reconnecting with these insecurities, understanding, going separate ways, drives positive connection in a way where harboring these insecurities and not understanding yourself and not understanding others drives disconnection. And I'll give an example. The example I gave in the previous podcast, spirituality. I think I may have mentioned it to either one or both of you. I was walking on the phone. Don't remember who I was on the phone to. I was walking on the phone and I was saying, okay. One of the things that really annoys me when I'm in conversation with women and say there's forcefulness or heatedness or raised voices on their behalf, and then you match it and it's like, line's been crossed. That really irked me. Because I was like, I'm just mirroring you. Like, you set these rules. It's like, don't do this in my house. I'm doing what you're doing in your house. It's like, why are you stomping around your house with your shoes on? I'm following you with my shoes on. You're saying, no, you can't do that. Why was that? Why was I irked? And what drew me to this awareness is, I heard on the phone, my voice, you can hear how my voice is raised. I was like, yeah, this really annoys me. And the other person was relating. I was like, it really irks me. And then I took a step back and I said, but I don't need to be irked. Why am I actually irked? Like, I'm fine with that happening. People can express emotions around me. That's fine. Why am I irked? I'm irked because it points towards, I don't know if I use the word insecurity, but I don't have a solution here. I'm irked because it points towards an insecurity of I don't know how to act within my boundaries in these conditions. In those conditions, I feel powerless. I can't don the tools that you can don. It feels like you can do everything and I can do nothing. Even when, if we're talking about being forceful, my tools are a bomb to your pebble that you throw at a rock. But I still can't don them. And the insecurity is, I don't know how to conduct myself and stay true to myself and my values and who I want to be in those moments. So it throws me into a tiny bit of crisis. And I said, that's why I'm annoyed. That's why this truly annoys me. Because I'd love to be the sort of person who can hold the discomfort of others. Not everyone is supposed to be Buddha. Not everyone is supposed to be a stoic. But when I don't understand myself and I haven't reached levels within myself, it's like, don't raise your voice at me. Don't speak to me like this. And you're just shutting yourself off from understanding people and from listening to people and from being able to connect with people. And I think it takes a very good, it takes a lot of work to get to that position when you can truly do that.
Yeah, it's about, you go back to your opening sort of summary of understanding yourself, understanding your insecurities. It's about understanding yourself rather than why, not necessarily starting with why when they did or said this or that. This is how it made me feel. There's this blanket that's there, that's me. This blanket level of emotions, responses. So anybody could come along and potentially ruffle that. If I don't understand what's there, what can be ruffled, and how I can be in control of whether or not I'm ruffled.
Because it's easy to live your life
out of control.
Out of control. Everything's a knee jerk. I don't know why this has irked me so much. I don't know why this pains me so much. But I think when you do that, as you said, these insecurities are a shield. You push people away. You're defensive, you're combatant. Push people away. And I think a greater and deeper awareness of my insecurities allows me to connect with myself a bit more, feel a bit more whole, feel a bit more accepting of myself, understanding myself a bit better, and allows me to do exactly the same with others.
And it's about being in control rather than being controlled. And for me, part of that is about taking a step back. I have my insecurities, whatever they are. I'm not always aware of what my triggers are.
That's my cat just trying to tear down the kitchen door because he's greedy.
But there are many times when it's almost a flight response. I'm simply not going to deal with this. I'm simply not going to respond because I know where I go internally and I don't need to share that with you. I don't need to share that by giving a response because I have my own inner workings to deal with, which you have no clue about because I haven't responded to you. And I don't want to or care to respond to you to let you know, but I care enough about myself to deal with something that you have triggered, for want of a better word, that you have caused to happen within me, but I'm going to be selfish because I need to protect myself or I need to preserve myself or I need to feel better or whatever the or is. So that it kind of almost aligns itself where it's on a continuum of this insecurity, this behind the shield of me. It doesn't speak to the fear element that I was thinking of earlier, but it does speak to the dealing with myself element and trying to stay in or regain control.
Is there anything else either of you wanted to add to that conversation?
Did we address? Is this the way that you thought it, imagined it might go in terms of speaking about insecurities?
I've stopped imagining. Because the more you imagine, the more you try to orchestrate. Mm. If there's only one fine path, one of the phrases I've been saying is trying to be there more for the person I am rather than the person I want to be. When there's one fine path of what you want this conversation to be, you're less there for the conversation it is, and you're more there for the conversation you want it to be.
Mm.
I've had to learn that over the years. So I prep less, and I'm more prepared for the conversation to diverge and go wherever it needs to go.
Be truly organic.
Be truly organic. Because a lot of times, if we come correctly, you're speaking and you're having a conversation you need to have. I can't define that beforehand. Is that that? It's a different kind of pain. It's a different kind of pain. Crafting your happiness. Crafting your happiness. It's a different kind of pain. It's a different kind of pain. Crafting your happiness. Crafting your happiness.